When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good morning. You're in the Situation Room. I'm Grant Cohn. This is Lowell Cohn. We have breaking news. Brandon Ayuk has officially requested a trade from the 49ers. This is different than the other times when he went on social media and said he was unhappy and he didn't want to be here. Now it's official. He has officially requested a trade. I don't know if that means he sent in a fax or he just yelled loudly at his living room, Dad. But what do you make of Brandon Ayuk getting serious?
Well, let's give a little background first. The way we know it is the national people have reported it. That's where all the news comes from these days. There's no Ira Miller locally who's breaking all this news. Schefter and a lot of other people. So I take it that's what's being reported is absolutely accurate. Clearly, this is like a game of chess. This was his next move. Yeah. He wasn't getting what he wanted. This was his next move. And according to what we read, the Niners haven't even really talked to him about contract. They said, since when, Iggy? May. Better for you to say what you make of it, because you're really the football expert. And then I'll come in later.
Well, there's a similar situation happening in Cincinnati. T. Higgins, wide receiver. He was taking like 7 or 8 picks after Ayuk, and he wants an extension. And Cincinnati said, no, he was a second round pick. So there's no fifth year option for him. So what they did was they franchise tagged him, and he has to play on that this year. And if he doesn't like it, tough. And he's going to have to play on it. So the 49ers are probably looking around like, no one's saying that the Bengals are bad people because of the way they're doing business with T. Higgins. Why can't we do the same thing with Brandon Ayuk? We don't want to pay him $30 million a year. We don't. We don't have to. We're going to do this. And he can get upset about it if he wants, but it's business and it's how what other teams do too. It's happening all over the league.
So let's go over the steps of what it means. If they can't agree, they own him for the upcoming season at around $14 million. Right,
yeah.
Iggy?
Yeah.
So they own him. And he has zero leverage except to say that he's angry and his feelings are hurt, right?
Correct.
Okay. Then in the next season, 2025, they could franchise tag him. And then in the next season, 2026, they could franchise him again.
That's 100% correct.
So they own him from their point of view for the next 3 seasons.
Yes.
How much leverage does that give Ayuk?
None.
None.
What is none, Alex?
It is the chance. It is the leverage that Ayuk has over the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's just frustrated and trying to get some power and control and flailing, both.
Yeah, he's learning that the world is a very difficult place. And you know what, Brandon? We all had to learn it, and it sucks. It's really hard. Now, what could also happen is he'd be disgruntled. That's a sports word. You never usually say things. Opt in,
Yeah.
He'll be disgruntled.
Disgruntled.
So what does disgruntled mean? It might mean he'd be a sourpuss in the locker room, and he's a little bit of a sourpuss anyway. And he might or might not get along with his teammates and the coach and all of that. But if it affects his performance, he's hurting himself.
The fear is that he would affect the team with his negative attitude. But again, that would probably be cutting off his nose to spite his face. That could hurt the team, but it would also hurt him.
Right. And because word would get out, you know, Ayuk is doing this, Ayuk is doing that. And then maybe the Cleveland Browns or whoever will hear it and won't want him. So he's in a position where, in spite of himself, he would have to be the best Brandon Ayuk on the field, or else they'll pull him off.
Yeah, and he's in this position where he keeps saying, like, he's worth more than the Niners are offering him. Other teams, Washington or Pittsburgh, would pay him more. Yeah, maybe. But when it's time for them to offer the 49ers something in a trade for Brandon Ayuk, it hasn't been reported that anyone's offered a first-round pick. So how in demand is he really? It seems like he's trying to cash in on an inflated wide receiver market, but no one in the league, including the Niners, really looks at him as a bona fide elite wide receiver.
Iggy, do you think they will offer him an extension soon?
I mean, yeah, that was the interesting information. They haven't offered him anything. They haven't engaged in talk since May.
Yeah. So do you think, I mean, training camp opens next week. Do you think they're going to offer anything in the next week?
I mean, it does seem like their pattern to make an initial lowball offer, wait all offseason, let the player stew on it, and then sort of come in at the 11th hour and hope that the relief of getting another offer ends the deal, seals the deal. I could see them doing that in like 2 weeks, saying, okay, here's a little bit more money. What do you say? Not a lot more, a little bit more. What do you say? And then if he still says no to that, I mean, first of all, I want to give the Niners credit for holding firm. I said they should not give him $30 million. He's not worth that to them. He isn't. So good for the 49ers. I didn't know they had it in him.
I think we also ought to say that if they do extend him, it probably means in the next year, well, they're going to have to pay Purdy at some point. And that's going to be more money than Ayuk is asking for, and Purdy deserves more money. Come on, he's the quarterback and he's really good. It means probably that Debo would not be on the team anymore after this season if they keep Ayuk and give him an extension.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if the Niners are necessarily 100% sold on which one they want long term. It's like, yeah, Debo's a little older and Ayuk's a better pure wide receiver, but which one's more replaceable? Which one's more of a malcontent? Which one wants to be here?
And which is more of a threat on the field?
Right.
Yeah. I want to say something else, and this is, I'm talking about optics and maybe a little bit about morality. I understand why Ayuk wants, let's make it round figures. They're offering 25 a season. He wants 30 million a season. I don't know the details, but it's pretty close, I think. He wants 30 as opposed to 25, not because it will change his lifestyle. It's because it'll assuage his ego. He wants to be paid what the other elite wide receivers are paid. It's competition. It's not economic need. Would you agree with that, Iggy?
I would absolutely agree.
Okay. We are living in a time where there's very high inflation, where people are having trouble paying their bills, where people have to work multiple jobs, and a guy works two jobs and the wife works also because they have to, you know, raise a family, pay a mortgage if they can even get a house, all of that. I don't think Ayuk has thought about this. I'm not saying he's a bad person, but the optics are very bad. He's bitching because he can't get $30 million. And he's essentially saying he's getting screwed because the Niners are only offering $25 million, whereas Harry and Gladys down the street are working three jobs to keep the family together. Am I supposed to have sympathy for Brandon Ayuk? I understand his position, but it comes from ego, not need. And it's at a time when people are really, really struggling, where eggs cost a lot of money when I go to Safeway and buy them. So I'm not saying he's a bad person, but what he's doing is so, I would have to say a little, yeah, let's call it tone deaf. People are struggling, really struggling, and he's struggling because they're only going to give him $25 million a year? Come on, Brandon. Give me a break.
It's fair for him and his agent to push for what they feel they're worth in their field and their market. Like Nick Bosa did the same thing. Debo did the same thing. But to take it a step further and to try to like rile up a grassroots campaign that looks at Brandon as a victim in this is tone deaf. Like, fight for what you want to fight for behind closed doors, but don't expect average people to walk down the street and say, man, the Niners are screwing Brandon. Have you heard? Have you heard what the Niners are doing? I can't, in good conscience, go about my day and have a good time while Brandon Ayuk is merely being offered $26 million a year. It's not right. And it's what's wrong with our country, sir.
It's true. And Gladys down the street saying, it's true. We can't pay our bills, but let's get a GoFundMe page for Brandon Ayuk.
Yeah. Exactly. That's kind of what he's wants. It seems like he's going on. When he went on The Pivot with Ryan Clark and a bunch of other people, every single person that interviewed him said, Hey, I just want you to know you're worth whatever you're asking for. They didn't even say what he was asking for. We think you're worth whatever you're asking it for. And it almost felt like a precondition of getting the interview. You had to say that, Brandon, I think it's terrible what's happening to you. And my heart goes out to you and you're worth it. And it's like, how many people really feel that way right now?
Yeah. Iggy, do you have a side in this? Niners, Ayuk?
No. It's a lot of rich people. I want $26 million a year. I'll take it.
Would you take 20?
I would settle for 20.
You'd settle for 20?
I would settle for 20.
And would you be disgruntled?
I could be gruntled. I don't know if I'd be disgruntled. All right, let's talk about something other than Brandon, who's really upset.
Wait a minute. Don't rush.
Okay, let's keep talking about Brandon.
I kind of like talking about Brandon.
Okay.
I kind of do, because I asked you if you have a side in this. I'm trying to think if I have a side in this. Maybe I'm kind of neutral, but if I'm leaning anywhere, it's to the Niners. And I'll tell you why. I think if they pay all this money to Ayuk, it could hurt them down the line with the team. So I don't think they're doing anything malicious to Ayuk. I think they're looking out for the greater good of the team. And I understand that. And so I guess maybe I appreciate their position a tiny bit more than Ayuk's. Can you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, the only thing with the Niners is like, you have the leverage. You can do whatever you want, and you're going to do it, and you're going to make this guy very upset. Is there any actual fallout from that? Like, we can laugh about it, like, oh, Brandon's going to be disgruntled, but what about the message it sends to the locker room? Like, hey, we're not as player-friendly as you thought, and if we have to hold you against your will on this team, we will. We're just like every other team. Is that a problem? Because it seems like they've worked so hard with John Lynch the last few years to be like, we're player friendly. We understand what you want. Eric Armstead, you want to be released, we'll release you. We're just the good guys here.
What I know about locker rooms is players don't buy that baloney. They know it's business and they know it's cutthroat. I don't think they think the Niners are different from any other team in the league. That's hype. That's not what goes on in a locker room. And I think that other players are not going to say, God, they only offered him $25, $26 million. What a bunch of bums. I don't think they're going to feel that way, because most players on that team are not going to earn that much money.
Yeah. I think that's what the Niners are calculating on as well. Think Ayuk's thinking that the Niners don't want to be seen as an organization that sort of jerks around top players or is unwilling to pay what they're worth. But I think the Niners are looking at it as like, man, Brandon, you're putting yourself above everyone on the team and you're going to lose support from your own teammates because of this.
What does McCaffrey earn a season?
Like 19.
19.
Yeah.
So he wants to make $11 million more a year than CMC.
Correct.
From the point of view of John Lynch and Jed York, who's more valuable to the team, Ayuk or the running back?
The running back.
Oh, Not even, Iggy, I'd say it's not even close. Not even close. So do you think McCaffrey is sitting at his locker and thinking, boy, they're really screwing this guy. They're only offering him $6 million a year more than they're paying me. I'm very angry. I'm very angry at you, Jerky.
Yeah, that's where I don't see where Ayuk is going to get the support. It's not going to be from fans or from teammates. They offer 25, 26. You want 29, 30. That's between you guys. No one really cares. No one's heart is bleeding for you.
I think he's on an ice floe. I think he's on his own, howling at the moon. I do. Yep.
And as every week goes by and he does something else to stay in the news or to try to garner sympathy, I think he looks worse.
I happen to think so, too.
Yeah. I think we've all suffered from Ayuk fatigue. And at this point, a lot of people are like, you know what, dude, just play out the fifth-year option and see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We got a super chat from JC who says, come on, $5 million is $5 million. Is that true? Is $5 million? He can get $30 million somewhere else. For $5 million, I would hate you. Don't exactly understand what he's talking about.
But you know what? Currently, he can't get $5 million else more because he signed the contract. And he's under contract.
He's under contract.
He's under contract.
All right. I want to talk about the legacy of the Shanahans real quick before we talk about training camp, because this is the backdrop of the season. They just lost another Super Bowl, and they'll tell you that it's very difficult to win Super Bowl. Debo said, hey, you guys don't understand how hard it is to win a Super Bowl. It's true. It is really hard. It's also hard to blow a 10-point lead in a Super Bowl. In all the Super Bowls, there's almost been 60 of them, seven teams that had double-digit leads went on to lose. Only seven. And of those seven teams, either Kyle Shanahan or Mike Shanahan was on four of them. So that's really got to be their legacy right now. Mike won a few Super Bowls, but he also blew that one, lost a few as a coordinator. Kyle's only lost them. They have created a scheme that organizations like, and they have a coaching tree, but their ability to build a lead and then completely blow it in the biggest game of the season is kind of is statistically unparalleled.
What did Mike do against Washington?
This was in 1988. I think I was like 2 weeks old. He had a 10-point lead early on in the game against Joe Gibbs in Washington and lost 42-10. So that was really the tone setter for the Shanahan legacy right there. This is how we do. And then Kyle grew up around that, replicated it three times.
He's a quick learner.
He's a quick learner, and he's very dedicated to his dad's legacy.
I would have to say Joe Gibbs, who beat Mike. Wow. Joe Gibbs was, people watching probably don't know, but I would say he rivaled Bill Walsh as an all-time great coach. He was really something, Joe Gibbs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
He really was.
Yeah.
He won. A lot of people feel like his resume is the best. I mean, he won three Super Bowls. Walsh won three Super Bowls. But Gibbs did it with three different quarterbacks. I don't think anyone else has done that.
Phenomenal. He was a great coach.
Yeah. Okay. Top stories at training camp this year. In the past couple of training camps, it was very much about Trey Lance. Can he throw a football? Can he throw it with a spiral? Do the 49ers like him? Is he happy? Will he play? That's all gone. Quarterback drama isn't as central anymore. We're kind of, well, let's talk about it. What do you think the top stories of training camp are this year? We can go through them one by one.
Well, we just talked about one. Ayuk.
Ayuk Watts.
Yeah, like, let's be real clear. Players report a week from today, next Tuesday. Well, everybody's going to be looking. Is he walking into the building? Right, Iggy?
Yeah.
So that's...
And all the questions for the players. Have you talked to Brandon? Is he here?
What's
on his mind?
They'll get pissed, right?
Of course, because that's not our fault.
No, because they don't want to have to speak for him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they said, you can talk to the players, but you can't ask them any Brandon questions.
They can't really do that.
No.
I can't really do that. I'm sure they'd like to.
Yeah.
But they're going to get, there's going to be so many creative ways to get Brandon into every question. So when you were out there on the field today, were you thinking how nice it would have been if Brandon was out there too?
I love it. You could do that, right?
Have you texted him?
What's have you talked like to him? Looking at his empty locker.
Yeah.
You know, is all prepared for him. What's it like looking?
What's your mindset if you're not going to have him this year? Do you expect he'll be back?
Yeah, that's going to happen, Iggy, right?
And you can't blame the media about that. Like, this is the situation. The Niners are very confident. Hey, you know, we're holding a hard line, and this is what we're going to do. Great. I love it. It takes guts. This is part of the fallout, though, these questions. Ayuk watches the number one storyline in training camp every day. Is he there? Is he there? Yeah. Here's what happened, but the number one story is that this guy still wasn't there.
So, Iggy, get this paradox. If he's not there, he'll be a presence in his absence.
He'll be a bigger presence in his absence than in his presence.
I love it. See, you're always smarter than I am. He'll be a bigger presence in his absence than in his presence.
Yeah, because if he shows up, then all of a sudden, Ayuk watch is over. Ayuk as a story is over. It's just him practicing football, which we've seen him do a million times. But if he's not there, he's bigger than everyone else. He's the cloud hanging over 90-degree Santa Clara.
And if he gets there and people say to him, well, you know, what happened is I only want to
talk, about football.
I don't want to talk about football, right?
I just want to talk about football. That's in the past. That was business. And I'm just focused on the future. And everyone's going to say that was the right thing to say. That is a smart young man.
I love these people. I only want to talk about football. I just spent a year kvetching about non-football stuff. I don't want to talk about football. And we both knew he would say that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That every time. And that's like what you're supposed to say as a football player. Because like football players are supposed to be the strong, silent type, right? You don't reflect. You don't look back. It's all about the next day and getting 1% better and iron sharpening iron and cliches, thinking in cliches, not really ever expressing yourself.
And the nickname is always their initials. Brandon Ayuk is B-A.
B-A. T-O.
T-O, right? It's always
when is Brock Purdy going to start going by BP?
BP. Josh Dubow and I always call each other by initials. I always call him JD.
LC.
LC.
LC. That's when you know you're a really good athlete, when you just go by your initials.
Initials. Okay, another storyline. The quarterback.
Yeah.
Talk about it. Expand on that.
The quarterback is always the biggest story, and I haven't covered a quarterback as good as Brock before. Every quarterback I've ever covered had a lot to prove in training camp. Jimmy Garoppolo, man, he threw a lot of picks. Colin Kaepernick would just scramble all the time and wouldn't throw. Trey Lance was learning how to throw. Brock's really good, and we've seen him in games. It's just in practice last year, he wasn't that good. He threw a lot of interceptions, and it didn't translate to the games. He had an outstanding season. Is that how he always practices, or was that because he was coming off an injury and he was young? And is this the year that he really takes command and dominates every day, like I would imagine Steve Young did or Joe Montana did? That'll be fun to watch.
Yeah. You know what the first question for Brock Purdy will be?
What?
Don't you wish you had Brandon Ayuk out there to throw the ball to?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Brandon's a great player, but you know, I got so much belief in these young guys out here, and you know, Ricky's playing hard, and we got Jacob, and you can't forget Tay, and we also got I mean, isn't that nothing against Brandon. We love Brandon, but right now the guys we got are working their butts off. You know, they're working their butts off, and I gotta give it up to Juwan. Juwan's been so good.
You could do the press conference, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You could go up. You could do the press conference.
I could say what he's going to say before he says it. Listen, nothing against Brandon. We love Brandon, and you know, whenever Brandon comes back, we're gonna welcome him with open arms. But for now, I'm just focused on the guys we have here right now, and the guys we have right near Dad. They are working their butts off. Okay, their butts off. I mean, they're staying after practice and working with them. We're getting extra throws in, extra routes in. They want it. They want it, and I want it too.
Okay, what's another storyline?
Nick Sorensen. the new defensive coordinator. What's his vision for the team schematically? Who's he going to play where? How does he comport himself? What's his personality? How does he work with Brandon Staley, who is the guy who could take his job at the bye week if things aren't going so well? Like, if they had Brandon Staley last year and Steve Wilks, they probably would have fired Steve Wilks instead of bringing him out of the booth and putting him on the sideline. So how does that relationship work? What's the next evolution of the defense? Because Kyle has pretty much blamed the defense for the problems of the team. That's the unit that is supposed to improve while the offense just stays the same.
Yeah. So the double-headed defensive coordinator, that's a third big storyline.
Big storyline, the double-headed defensive coordinator. Now your turn.
I think I ran out of them.
It's tough this year. Well, tough. That first-round pick, Ricky Pearsall, is a big story.
Talk to me.
I mean, is he the real deal? If Brandon Ayuk really wants to take this to the mattresses and hold out of camp and maybe miss a couple of games...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Is that no problem for the Niners? Is Ricky Pearsall good enough and the rest of the offense is clearly talented? If that's the case, then Brandon's got a big problem. But really, Brandon aside, Pearsall was the most controversial first-round pick this year. No one thought he should be a first-round pick. In OTAs and minicamp, he looked pretty good. I don't know if he looked like Brandon Ayuk, but let's see what he's got.
That's a good storyline.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not Dante Pettis or AJ Jenkins. He looks better than them. How good is he? We'll see.
Iggy, have you ever talked to him?
Not face to face yet. They haven't brought him out. They gave there was like a not really face. He was at a podium one time.
What was he like?
He seemed really kind of soft spoken and confident, but agreeable, nice. He didn't seem like he had a big ego. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, you'll get to know him better.
Yeah, he brought his family and his girlfriend there. He seemed, I don't know, they all seem so young now, Dad. He's like 12 years younger than me.
Even to you, can you imagine how young they seem to me?
They seem so young. When I first was on the beat, all the players were so much older than me, and I was really intimidated. Like Joe Staley, older, Justin Smith. Now it's like, man, how? You were born in, what, 2000? Wow.
Hey, you know what, Iggy? Justin Smith was intimidating to any age. He was an intimidating guy.
He would walk around in the locker room after games and media wouldn't even go up to ask him if he wanted to talk because they knew the answer was no. He's like the best player on the team. Should we talk to Justin? Probably not.
Hey, Iggy, I one time did go up to him. They were up at Candlestick. And I went over to his locker and this is really what happened. I said, could I ask you a question? And he started laughing. He was laughing to the people around him, the other teammates. He goes, I don't answer any questions. I said, answer my questions. And he did.
That's so funny.
It was like, I didn't come on strong. I just said, I know you don't, but it might be fun. He said, what the hell? And he did. He was really nice.
I don't answer questions. I think it's so funny. Like the beat crew had understood, like, hey, we're going to stop trying with Justin. We'll leave him alone. You didn't know no better. I like that.
Yeah, and he was as sweet as could be. You know, after he tried to put me off and I made it a joke, and I think he's probably a really good guy.
He probably is a really good guy. He didn't really talk about not wanting the spotlight. He just retired and faded away.
Yeah.
I never heard him fighting for an extra $4 million a year. He should have went on a podcast so he could get it. We think Brandon's next move is going to be.
That's a really good question. Let's go slow here. his next move, first of all, he has very few moves, Iggy. Mm-hmm. He's in danger right now of checkmate.
Yes, he is.
He's being chased around the board. He's in danger, and he has very few moves to make. He's sort of in a corner, right, on the board.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Niners have their queen and their rooks and their bishops, you know what I mean? All over the place.
And he's really, like, dug into a pretty bad position that he has to maintain.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one move would be to refuse to report and refuse to play.
Yeah.
That's a bad move, Iggy.
It's a costly move. It's an expensive move. And it doesn't necessarily work out for him.
That's right. It's a risk with very little chance of success. And it's a bad look. Again, Seattle's going to look at that or whoever and say, this guy's a misanthrope. Do we want this guy in our team? So I feel he probably wouldn't do that. Do you have a suggestion of what another possible move could be?
This feels like the last move. You request a trade. Time goes by. They still don't give it to you. What else can you say? Like, I'm not going to practice until I get a new deal. Okay. Well, they'll fine you like $40,000 to $50,000 a day. So I think what's going to happen is, like, I think he'll show up. They call it holding in. Like, hey, I'll be there. I'll go to the meetings. I'll work out, but I'm not going to practice. So you can't find me, but I'll actually be there. And I'll be invested in the team. That seems like the most likely. Because there's no guarantee that if he holds out and then signs something at the end that they'll give him his money back like they did for Nick Bosa. He could hold out for a month, not get an extension, and then still have to pay all those fines. That would be bad.
They usually give you the money back, right?
Usually.
So, Iggy, he could theoretically go to meetings but not practice, and why would he say he's not practicing?
Because he's not going to step on a practice field without the security of a long-term deal or something?
Okay. All right.
You could say that. Okay. Let's take a little break from the action, do some sleeper picks. We can't do baseball because they're on the All-Star break, which is a great break. It's always fun to watch people play exhibition games. So let's talk about the real competitors out there right now, WNBA. Only real league really going strong in mid-July, and we've been watching closely. So how about Jewel Loyd? Jewel Loyd has been stuffing the stat sheet these days, Dad, as we know. She's kind of a triple, but she can do whatever. 3.5 assists. She had 7 the last game and 6 before then. I feel like people don't really understand how big of a playmaker Jewel Loyd can be. I'm saying more as well. I feel like that's an easy one. Maybe we could find a tougher one. Here, Rekia Jackson. Now, Rekia Jackson's young. She's new on the scene, 23 years old, 6'2". She put up 23 points in the last game, 6 before that, a little inconsistent. But for rebounds, 4.5, I feel like that's easy for Rekia, excuse me.
It sounds easy. I think so. More.
I'm going to go more as well. But just knowing her like we do. Final one. Marina Mabry. Now, Marina, she really can pass the rock. And she can shoot threes. What do you think, Dad? 4.5 assists for Marina. Can she do it?
I'm saying fewer.
I don't think it's her day. She's due. One more, because I like doing this. Dawana Bonner, 36 years old, been around, a vet. 17.5 points. What do you think, Dad? 17 in the last game, but before then, she was center.
I think she's a little tired.
14 years of experience, I'd be tired too. Let's view the entry, flex it, submit the entry. Boom. If you guys would like to make an entry yourselves or support the channel, it does help. Use the promo code CONE for your first deposit. Let me know, and I'll send you your money back if it's $10. $10. All right, Dad. Let's take the viewers inside training camp.
That I love. So here's the thing. One of the things a journalist can do that regular people can't do, journalists are regular too, they can bring you inside there to the place that you're not allowed to go. They're credentialed to do it. So, Iggy, let me lead this one. The players show up Tuesday and Wednesday, right, next week.
Mm-hmm.
Where will you be and where will you interact with players?
If I remember correctly, the first 2 days are just interviews, no practice. So players doing physicals and doing conditioning tests and things like that. And sometimes players get injured doing conditioning tests. Jason Verrett did that. So things can happen, but mostly it's we're in the media room and they'll either bring players to us in the media room or they'll bring us to the podium, the auditorium, and we'll interview captains and stuff and ask them, you know, how excited are they to be back? And they'll say they're so excited to be back.
Iggy, what is the distance between the press room and the auditorium?
Maybe 200 yards. You walk out, you're underneath, you're over by like the, you're pretty close to, you're in the same level as the grass. So you're pretty close to a tunnel that would take you out to the field where the players would come in and out, the opposing team. So you walk to the left and all of a sudden you're in one of these big underground lounges that they made for rich people in Levi Stadium. You walk through that and then you're over by the Niners locker room, and across the hall from the Niners locker room is their auditorium. So it's pretty convenient for everyone. They walk across the hall. We walk 100, 200 yards. And then we're in this big auditorium that's made for the Super Bowl. The Niners wanted Levi Stadium to be Super Bowl friendly. So huge press box, huge auditorium. And there's like 8 of us in an auditorium that's built for like 500 people. And we sit all in the front. And we have microphones above us. There's a microphone on the stand. And it's very official.
I would say that the auditorium is really nice.
It is nice.
It's really nice. It's a pleasure to be in there. And I also want to make it very clear. What we're talking about is not the practice facility, but the stadium. The auditorium and the press room are underneath the stadium. And the players' lockers are underneath the stadium. So all this happens, it's street level, but it's way underneath the stadium in sort of concrete catechisms.
It's right? Actually a little below street level, and these are all rooms without windows.
So it's a little below street level. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and auditorium, no windows.
You're right.
Yeah, media room, no windows. Locker room, no windows. It's like little bunkers.
Little bunkers, right. And so you pretty much on Tuesday and Wednesday spend most of your time hanging around the press room. Everybody's on their computers, patching away, doing whatever. And then people from the media either bring players into you or say so-and-so is available in the auditorium and everybody schleps over there. So we got that.
What's interesting is when I first started in 2011, there was no Levi Stadium. Everything was extremely informal. There was a trailer. Remember the media trailer?
I do.
And they would bring players in one by one, and we would walk over and stand in a circle and hold your little recorder up to the guy's face. I remember we would get Colin Kaepernick before he was a starter. He was so smiley and nice and talkative, and Delanie Walker came in, and he was really cool. I mean, we used to do that. It used to be that way. And then with Harbaugh, I mean, practices would start in the late afternoon. It was this all-day marathon. Now, like, when the practices finally start, it'll probably be maybe a 12 o'clock practice, noon. It'll be over at 1:30. They'll have all the interviews afterward till about 2:30, and then they're done. Media is like two and a half hours, and then the rest is us just writing and streaming and things like that. But when I first got there, if you remember, it would be, you get there, we'd do interviews, we would talk to the coaches, we would eat, then there'd be time off. Then there'd be practice at like 3 p.m. It would go like 2 hours and 45 minutes. Then you'd interview Harbaugh after practice about what happened. I mean, it was a marathon. It was every day. It was incredible.
Iggy, are you excited that training camp is about to start?
I love training camp. I think it's my favorite part of the season because It's like the rest of the year, you talk about games that everyone can watch. And it's fun to be one of the people analyzing football. It's very competitive and hard to do. But this time is not necessarily like analyzing. It's a lot of describing. It's things that people want to see, but they're not invited to. And so there's like 10 people there who try their best to transport the readers or the viewers into the practice facility. And I like that competition. I think I'm really good at that one. It's a lot of fun. I think the NFL is really stupid for not filming these and broadcasting them. Like in basketball, there's summer league. That's, you can watch that. And people like to watch the young players that just got drafted play basketball. If the Niners streamed these practices, I think a lot of people would watch, but they don't. So I watch, and then afterward I stream and tell everyone what happened. And it's a lot of fun. It's like having a radio show 100 years ago where you're saying what happened like in a war or something, or with the alien invasion. The aliens came, the Martians are here.
And Iggy, when you do reports from training camp, how many will you do a day?
I will do a good and not so good from practice every day. And then I'll go home and stream from home and talk about each topic in greater detail. Sort of like I do after a game. I'll do grades and then I'll do a stream. I'll do the same thing after every day of training camp.
Iggy, you'll do a good and not so good. Mm-hmm. Why do you do that after practice?
Because we talked about this when I was like 23, when I was first starting on the beat, how to stand out. Everyone wants to do, everyone does a practice report, but it's usually like what I observed, 10 observations. And I think judgments are always more interesting than observations. Anyone can say some things that, you know, that struck them, but why don't you classify them into two groups, good and not even bad. It's just practice, but good and not so good. And when you do that, I think it makes the whole exercise more interesting, more engaging for everyone, and maybe more emotional for everyone.
When you include a player in the not so good and you go to practice the next day, are you concerned that you've hurt that player's feelings?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes, because sometimes, like, they really deserve it. Sometimes it's like, man, you just had one bad day of practice. I wrote about it, and he might really. What I noticed was it's often like the family that hyper fixates on it, like the parents or the sister or the brother or the girlfriend. And it's probably tough for him to tune all that out when he has the whole family being like, who is this guy getting on you? What is the deal? So, yeah, I'm aware of that. And sometimes I try my best not to pile on. Like, let's not put the same guy in the not so good section every day for the same reasons. Like, enough is enough. I've made a point, and I'm not trying to single him out for any reason. And I think when I was younger, I liked to do that. Like, I was 24 and I thought I was like fighting the power, speaking truth to power. Like, no one wants to say that Mike McGlinchey isn't any good, so I'm going to say it every day. It's like, nah, you made your point. Made your point. And I've reached a point in my career where I have a lot of power to shape narratives, and I don't want to necessarily like just turn a bunch of people against a guy because of some practices that I watched.
I had to learn that as well, Iggy.
Yeah.
You have to learn how to be balanced in your judgment and balanced in your presentation.
Yeah. You do. I mean, I think that's one of the things that happened with me and Kinlaw. Like, that's what that was all about. When we talked the next day with Lynch, talked for like an hour. And his questions for me was like, why do you do the good and the not so good? Like, why are you so judgmental of people practice? It's just practice. So there's so much pressure for first round picks like Kinlaw and McGlinchey and Trey Lance. And if you're not seen as like a great player, everything you do in every practice is scrutinized, and it must be really tough. And it's not just like what Kinlaw would say. It's like, it's not me. I'm not reading these things. It's like, do you understand how many people I have to hear from when you write this stuff? In my family, and that I have to tell him, like, hey, calm down. Like he's vouching for me. Like, that is tough. I understand that. That's probably something that didn't happen 13 years ago when I was writing blogs for the Press Democrat.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. I would say one thing that I, when I would criticize people, athletes, first of all, it's part of the deal. If you're going to make a lot of money and you're going to be a public figure, you're also going to get praise and criticism. That just comes along with it. But let's stay with football as opposed to other sports. Every game, the players, I'm going to talk about games now, but every practice as well, the players get graded. And the coaches may say things in a kind voice, but they don't hide the truth. You missed this tackle. We need you to do better here. All of this. And what's holding, what's over some of their heads is, or we'll cut you during practice, during training camp. Not not McCaffrey, but other people. So whatever I wrote as a columnist would be nothing close to what was happening with coaches and players behind closed doors. And what I wanted to say about Kinlaw, I don't know Kinlaw. I think he's probably a nice man, and I think he's sensitive, but he was angry at the wrong person.
Right.
He should. His issues really were not with you or any other media people. His issues were with himself and the team.
Yeah. I mean, the same thing happened with Dante Pettis. I called him a bust, I believe, in his second season, and he came up to me. He was different than Kinlaw. He was raised differently, spoke differently, but he had the same anger. He came up to me in the locker room one time and said, how the fuck can you call me a bust? How can you say that? And I mean, I didn't want to be rude, but all I could really say was, I don't know, man, I've watched you play a lot. Sorry. That doesn't make me happy to say it, but I've watched you play a lot. And he was. But you have to be like Jaquaski Tart came up to me once in the locker room and was like, man, why are you always ragging on me? What did I do to you? Like, why am I always in the not so good section? Like, why are you always finding ways to put me down? It's like, I didn't realize I was doing that, but I'll think about it and I'll try to find ways to praise you when you deserve it. And so sometimes, like, I think you need a player to come up to you and be like, hey, man, like, what's the deal? Like, I didn't even think about that. Fair enough.
That is fair enough. In fact, one time, and I don't even know what the issue was, Steve Young got very angry at me. And he took me aside and he said, I don't see how you could write that, blah, blah, blah. And my answer was, Steve, let me think about it and I'll get back to you. And I think we worked it out. But the point is, I do appreciate when a player comes up to me, as long as they're rudimentarily polite.
Yeah, Kinlaw wasn't rudimentarily polite. But then we worked out the next day. Pettis was. Tart was extremely polite. Pettis was upset. Tart was, gave it more like, I'm you know, I'm kind of disappointed in you, but I'll give you another chance. He always seemed like a nice guy. And I think he was good friends with Jimmy Ward, who liked me. So he was probably thinking like, dude, I don't understand it. Like, Jimmy says you're a good guy. You give Jimmy the benefit of the doubt. Like, what did I do? Why not me? Fair enough.
Iggy, is Dante Pettis still in the league?
He is. He is. He's still around. He just signed. I forget which team he's on, but he's been around for like 6 years, 7 years. Good for him.
God love him.
Yeah.
God love him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I
used to do my post-practice things on Periscope instead of YouTube. And on Periscope, it tells you like who exactly is watching. You know everyone who's watching. And his sister would watch all of them. It made me feel so bad. It's like, oh, God. I'm sorry. He was great. He was so good today.
Oof.
Ooh. Also, the mayor of Santa Clara would watch a lot.
Because she doesn't like Jed, right?
Right. I think she likes when I would be critical of them. Lisa Gilmore?
Yeah, Lisa Gilmore.
That was pretty funny. Yeah. We got Blood Moon says, people who say Niners should have paid BA last year. What team pays 2 years early? BA's agent gambled by saying, let's wait for Jefferson and see what happens. The Eagles and the Dolphins did that this year with their first round picks. Seems to be the thing to do. It's cheaper. But from the Niners' perspective, they still can get him for as cheap as they want. $14 million for Brandon Ayuk this year is about half his market value. So that's a bargain.
It sure is a bargain.
That's a bargain. Half off BA.
BA.
Half off BA. All right. Well, we did 48 minutes today, Dad. That's pretty good. Thanks to BA.
I want you to tell people what you and I are going to try to do this afternoon.
Oh, let's talk about that. So my dad has been essentially retired since 2017. And he wrote a book called Gloves Off, which some of you have read. And he wants to get back into writing. So he's going to start a Substack today. And if the two of us can put our collective brain power together and get it going, he will post his first column, entry, essay on Substack today. And I urge all of you to subscribe. It'll
well,
be
it's
free.
It's going to be free. It's going to be free.
It's going to be free. And my dad's coming out of retirement and he's going to be writing on sports and non-sports. And he's going to be writing with curse words and non-curse words. It's going to be a different version of Lowell than you've seen before. If you've read his books, you'll know a little bit what it's like. He's going to have some of those chapters on Substack as well, which will be nice.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to have some chapters from Gloves Off edited and shorter on Substack. My publisher said I'm allowed to do that. So I'm going to do that. And I'm also have another book in progress. It's a memoir and it's not sports. I call it Brooklyn Jew. And it's a story of my life, actually. And I'm going to excerpt some of those and give me a running start. And there's going to be an essay along the way about Judge Judy. I'm in love with Judge Judy. And I'm going to have within the first month, my little essay on Judge Judy and what she brings to the world. And the reason I'm doing it is because Grant and his older brother, Brian, noticed that I don't do a lot with my days. And they said, you know, you're a writer. You ought to write again. You ought to do Substack. And I, of course, had never heard of Substack. And then I delayed and delayed and delayed almost about 8 or 9 months. But today I'm jumping in the deep end of the pool. If we can figure out how to do it.
I think I can figure it out.
Okay.
All right, so, Dad, let's go meet up and do some Substack to get you unretired. I love you too.
Thank you.
See you guys.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.